Each of us has a unique career story to tell. For some, these fly high like rocket launches. For others, they're more like the game of chutes and ladders, with advances and setbacks along the way. Either way, we learn countless lessons from these experiences. And that's what we put into the spotlight here at Career Sessions Career Lessons. Join discussions featuring a variety of guests sharing their stories of ups and downs, as well as the secrets of their success and what drives them to continue moving forward. We break down the tools and resources that will help you establish your dream career and realize your professional goals. Here's your host, J.R. Lowry.
I'm J.R. Lowry. This is Career Sessions Career Lessons, which is brought to you by Pathwise. Pathwise is dedicated to helping you live the career you deserve, providing coaching, content, courses, and community. Basic membership is free, so visit pathwise.io and join today. Today, my guest is one of our Pathwise coaches, Heather Wilkerson. Heather is an International Coaching Federation certified coach. And apart from her involvement with Pathwise, she provides coaching services through a number of other coaching platforms and is the founder of Heather Wilkerson Coaching, where she provides professional, personal, and career change coaching, focusing on leadership development and managing change for both individuals and teams. Heather began her career in human resources and employee assistance programs, and she moved to career coaching more than 20 years ago. She led leadership and career programs for Brown University alumni and served as the director of career services for the Brown University Master's in Public Administration program. She lives in Rhode Island with her husband and has four children at various stages of launch. Heather, welcome. Thanks for doing the show with me today.
Of course. Thanks, JR, for having me.
Let's talk about your current work. Your work centers around coaching. Give our audience a little bit more of the specifics of the kinds of things that keep you busy.
The main things I work on are really helping clients manage change and reach goals. A lot of my clients are middle managers or emerging leaders, people who are really facing work-life balance challenges. And I've recently been moving more into working with teams because I've always seen people in terms of how they are in a system. So that's been a really fun part of my work. And I've been very lucky because I also work with some CEOs. I do a CEO facilitation group. I get to see what the employees are experiencing and hear what the leaders are talking about and really get a good grasp on the system.
It must be fun. I know you do that in Rhode Island where you live. You get kind of a sense of the local landscape in terms of the companies and what some of the startups are doing. And there's a pretty good startup community there. So I'm sure that's fun.
Yes, it is. In fact, I'm doing some volunteer work with one of the companies that helps startups, being a mentor. So that's pretty fun too.
Cool. So you were an HR professional before you got into coaching. What led you to make the shift?
Well, I mean, my goal has always been helping employees have their best lives and really understand that balance between work and self. I actually have a master's in counseling where I focused on employment issues. I did some work in employee assistance, and then I've always vacillated between wanting to get to the early stages, being proactive. So for a while I did some programming and education. And then I really just missed some of that individual work. I missed being part of a business system because I was helping people with their careers, but I wasn't actually part of that world of work. Yeah. I just delved into that about 5 years ago and just love it.
So what's a coaching experience like? I mean, a lot of people, they know there are coaches and they know people who've seen a coach, but they really don't have a sense of what the process is like. So what would someone who's never been coached, what could they expect from a coaching session?
That's funny. Yesterday, I was like, are you going to give advice to me? And I was like, probably not. Yeah. Coaching is, I always see it as that gap between where you are and where you would really love to be if you had all the opportunities in the world. I got into coaching because I wanted to give people a space to really be able to delve into maybe the things that are getting in their way. Right, really understand what are their strengths and be able to get clear on goals. Coaching is a lot of that.
There are a lot of myths out there about coaching for people who haven't ever worked with a coach and think that it's, oh, this is just for people with issues, but it's not, right? I mean, it's ultimately, I think, to your point about helping you become more successful. So what are some of the other myths that you have to dispel people of when you start working with them or when you're talking about working with them?
Myths of coaching are probably innumerable, you know, depending on your view of what a coach is. What coaching is not is it's not therapy. It is also not consulting or mentoring. It's not giving you a ton of advice, but it's really challenging you, helping you figure out where you have choice in your life. It's also really giving you access to managing yourself, regulating your emotions, and really getting clear on who you want to be, what gives you purpose, and then using that to help you make better decisions in your life.
How should somebody think about seeing a coach versus just trying to work through things on their own or with the support of family or mentors, colleagues? Is there a tipping point where you think it makes sense to like get a paid professional to help?
That's a great question. I actually get that question a lot. People who are fortunate enough to have coaching provided as part of a benefit, they are often checking it out. And I've never had an experience where somebody didn't get some nugget of clarity or inspiration or just a new perspective from even a 1 hour introductory coaching session, whether they continued with it or not.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think, oh my gosh, it's so expensive. But in the scheme of things, if you think about the time and the energy that you invest in your career and how important for most people their careers are to their happiness and their sense of fulfillment. And I'm like, why would you not try and put yourself in a position where you feel as good about work as possible?
Yes. And when we don't invest in ourselves, then we are not really committing to our goals or having the life we want. And we're not giving ourselves the opportunity to know where we might be able to have more lucrative life or have more satisfaction or just have more meaningful conversations. One of the reasons I got into coaching is because I found that people were floundering, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that you mentioned that maybe we would talk about was being stuck. And I started in employee assistance and people were really stuck. They were ending up having to get counseling or making some really bad choices. So I would say if you can be constantly looking at, hey, what can I do to be my best self so that I have the energy to make good decisions and be present and create a life that I want, I might save myself a lot in the long run.
Sort of like an ounce of prevention, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the sense of feeling stuck. It is something that a lot of mid-level, mid-career professionals feel. Just all of a sudden, the things that have been working for them in the past just don't work anymore. What are some of the reasons that they ultimately are feeling that sense of stuckness?
There's a lot of things that go into this middle manager, and especially when they're new, but even after some time, that can really make them feel stuck. There's a couple of key themes that I have seen around this sort of group of people that I think really make it harder. One thing that is a fairly constant is this, I'm not enough, that leads to some perfectionism. They're trying to hold on to everything and still be an expert. And being a manager has a lot of duties. It has a lot of different skills that you need. So some things just have to be let go of.
Well, and I think a lot of new managers certainly struggle with that transition because they were very good at individual contributors. That's why they got promoted to management.
Yes.
But they haven't necessarily learned the management skills. And, you know, the big shift you have to make sounds really obvious what I'm about to say, but it's like all of a sudden your job is to get work done through others more than it is to get work done yourself. Now, a lot of managers will have kind of a hybrid player coach type role, but if you don't get the fact that your job is to make a group of people effective and you're still thinking about what you do individually, you know, you're kind of missing one of the basic tricks of that manager transition.
Yes. Again, it sounds basic, but delegating and having difficult conversations and then really like listening about what people want. Usually those individual contributors want to be more engaged, want to take something over so that they can grow their career. But I have a lot of managers that will say, oh, I don't want to burden them, or I need to be an expert. And one woman was really burnt out and it really struck me because she was really holding on to this piece of work. And finally, after we just kept talking about it and was poking at it, she was like, but if I don't do that, they won't need me. And I think that's a very big idea shift that it is hard to move to from that expert to that manager role.
I can remember the story that's stuck with me for decades. I heard it when I was in college. It was a story about a general in the Air Force, I think, who moved to this new base. This is when I was in ROTC training. And the general kind of pulled a bunch of people together and said, I'm going to know your jobs better than you do within the next month. And I thought, wow, is that like what leaders need to do to understand the jobs better than all the people who work for them? I mean, the reality is like if a general, I mean, let's say the general had 1,000 people ultimately in the scope of their organization, you will not know 1,000 people's jobs better than they do. And in some ways, I guess for new managers, if you can sort of accept the fact that the person up at the top, man or woman, who is presiding over the whole organization certainly can't know every job better and be the expert in everything, then there's a point at which you absolutely have to let go of that, right? And it's actually a key to moving up the ranks. Can't get it right in the first level of management. Yes. You're probably going to struggle to move into something more.
Yes, it's that evolution, leadership skills, and growing into that, knowing less and less and becoming more of that influencer, building an organization where there's trust and there's engagement so that you can, you know, make those career steps that you're interested in making.
Another thing I hear from a lot of people that I mentor and coach is just a sense of frustration that why am I not advancing? Like my boss just doesn't appreciate me. Why did he or she promote this person over me? Why did this person get this project assignment over me? And what exacerbates the challenge is most of their managers are not necessarily willing to really tell them what it's about. Right. I'm sure you run into that with your coaching clients as well.
Yes. And you're talking about both sides there, right? It's the frustration of the individual contributor, and it's the lack of leadership from the manager by not really providing that opportunity for growth from their staff. The hardest thing is to just keep asking and to notice and to, but this part that I really like to highlight for people when they're struggling with why I'm not getting ahead is, are they really clear about what that means to them? Like what they actually do bring to the table and look at, okay, what are my strengths? Where am I performing at my best work? What do I need to improve? Like we can see a lot of that ourselves if we just take a step back and look. And then where does the organization need what I bring to the table?
And sometimes you can have those conversations with your manager and kind of crack through it. Sometimes you can't. So you have to go looking for something someplace else in the company. And sometimes you actually have to move. A lot of people, I think it's like, they're like, but I don't want to move. I like working here. But you're frustrated with the job you have. It's like they need to kind of realize that there's a choice that they're going to have to make. And it may be a tough choice.
Right. And, you know, some of those questions that we're already asking. Okay, is this me? Is it the manager? Is it the organization? Yeah. Is there an opportunity for growth? Is there a way for me to maybe move to a different department? Are there some special projects that I could volunteer for that give me a chance to learn? Right. But, or am I just bored and really don't have a culture that's supportive?
Obviously, the situation's going to differ based on your own individual circumstances. And to your point, you kind of have to work through, is it me? Is it my manager? Is it the company? Is it some combination? And what's the best course of action? And it's hard sometimes. It forces you to confront things about yourself you might not realize or know. And it also forces you to sort of make a judgment on your management chain and whether they're going to be there for you or not.
Not to give a plug for us, but honestly, when I first heard you were starting Pathwise, I was like, this is what all of my clients, I wish they had, is a place to keep evaluating this and be in charge of my own career, because we cannot assume that somebody else is going to know what's best for us. They just don't.
You do have to take care of yourself. I mean, when the stars align, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you and your company are in complete synchronization about the next few years of your career. Nobody can really think too much further than that. And it's all working really well. Mm-hmm. Those are unfortunately more the exception than the rule. Mm-hmm. And there are times for everybody when your interests and your company's interests aren't going to align because you want something more than what they're able to give, or the opportunity is just not there for whatever reason, and you need to change employers. And that's happening more and more, right? I think when you and I first talked, and this goes back a few years at this point, but about the sort of the comparison to like the pension to 401k shift. You got to take care of your own retirement. You got to take care of your own career. Nobody's going to do it for you.
Right, exactly.
And I think there's still a lot of people out there who feel like it should be taken care of for them, or they're just not willing to work at it. And that's an unfortunate reality.
And maybe they are under the impression that that's how it works, right?
Yeah.
That I get a job and then I'll be reviewed and then I'll get some information about what I should do differently. And maybe
it's a perfect meritocracy.
Right. It's a perfect meritocracy. Everyone's going to be treated equally. In theory, that might be what an organization wants. But in reality, we have to stand up for ourselves. We have to be proactive. We have to sometimes toot our own horns. Yeah. We have to ask questions when we don't understand. And we might have to take some risks.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people really struggle with that, mm-hmm. that putting themselves out there, being curious, having a growth mindset, all of those things, at the risk of throwing out any more buzzwords, just the sense that they've got to take an outside in look on the situation and kind of ask themselves, why is X happening or why is Y not happening in the way that it is? And what do I do about it?
We all have choices and we can choose to stay, but staying without making the choice is in the end probably not going to be helpful for you. And then you get into blame and resentment and get down a slippery slope. That's not good.
No, it's not good. There's a couple of books that we have summaries on the website. One is Getting Unstuck by Timothy Butler from Harvard. Another one is probably more for people who are kind of moving up to the ranks. Marshall Goldsmith's What Got You Here Won't Get You There. That one's a classic, I think, in the scheme of things. So there are other things that you recommend to clients who are feeling that sense of stuck mm-hmm. books or mm-hmm. podcasts or videos or whatever.
I'm a huge podcaster. I do love to do that. We obviously have a great podcast. I love Adam Grant's Rethinking. I also like the new one by Angela Duckworth, There's No Stupid Questions. And there's just a myriad of any question that you have. It's out there. With my clients who are feeling stuck, I use a couple of key tools just to throw out there when yeah. they almost always I can find someone needs one of these three areas. And one is the positive intelligence saboteur, like understanding where you might be getting in your own way. The second one is mindset and the book Mindset by Dweck.
Yep.
It's great. Just some big, good basic growth mindset issues. And the third one is the four agreements, because making assumptions and is one of the biggest ways that people sabotage themselves.
Very true. All right. Some good suggestions there. That was the first of our sort of common mid-level topics. Another one is, I'm really not sure what I want to do.
Yes. That dreaded, I'm in the wrong place. Maybe it's because I have a 20-something and I have a lot of friends with kids in their 20-something. I've had a good handful come across, could you please talk to my niece or my son or my... And there's a lot of, I don't know what I want to do. I know I'm in these jobs and none of them are really appealing to me situation. And it's time to really take stock, right? Sometimes we have a skill. When I worked at Brown, I saw this a lot. Inevitably, I would have a whole slew of people who'd been out at 5 years or they'd come to their 5-year reunion and they'd be like, I was really good at math. So I went into finance and I really don't like it. It's the difference between a talent and a strength and something that's really motivating. It gives you a sense of purpose
yeah.
and something that you can do. And usually that's one big indicator of how people end up getting stuck is they can do something, but there's no passion or tie to it. I'm not a huge fan that everything has to be exactly a passion. But if 50% of your job isn't tied to some things that you really enjoy, and it can be very intangible. I had a vice president at a bank the other day, and he said, working with the team to bring a product together and then seeing it out the door just gets me up every day. It wasn't necessarily about banking or finance. It was about this process of creating.
It's great when people can realize what does excite them, right? I mean, there's certainly assessments out there that help you kind of figure out what your interest areas are. And back to your 20-somethings, in some ways, I think probably the best advice you can give them is this isn't a forever choice. Mm-hmm. Go try it. Figure out what you do and don't like about it and course correct. I think it gets harder when you get older. There's the 5-year reunion, definitely. I did this because my mom and dad wanted me to, but I was really good at math in your example. But then I think you get people who are 15 to 20 years in. At that point, they may be married. They may have kids. They've got a mortgage. The choices are a bit tougher. And they kind of have this sense of like, I am totally bored doing what I'm doing. I need to make a change. It's a hard transition, I think, for people at that level.
Absolutely. And as you said, you know, the longer you get down the road, the harder it feels like you can change. The one thing that I always tell my clients is that you may have been doing a job, but you've been using a lot of different skills and strengths that are used in many different jobs. I mean, the old term was transferable skills. And you may do other things in your life where you do the things that are more important to you, right? And you may find that in your position, you keep volunteering to be in other groups, or maybe you're the person who's always planning the party at Christmas and stuff, because that's really what you love to do. And it doesn't mean that you have to stay there or that it's going to be a quick, easy jump. One of the things I usually work with clients to do is they make a progression, because one of the biggest problems I find is that people just don't feel any sense of congruency with the organization that they're working for.
Yeah.
Taking your skills and moving it to an organization that's doing what you care about can at least get you partway there. And then you can start working towards some job creep and asking for more assignments in the type of work you would like to do.
I know in general, one of the things that I think you counsel people to avoid doing is making a snap decision, like just quitting their job on a whim or jumping into something new. You have this sort of adage that's in one of our training courses about going slow to go fast.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what that means in practice.
Well, I had a great example the other day. As a woman who had been working in finance for about 10 years, you know, for a pretty big job in New York. And she had transferred to a department that was incredibly toxic. And she stuck it out for about 2 years and finally found another position doing that in another company and jumped ship. And now she's been there for 6 weeks and she is feeling the same way. She took some of the same problems, right? Like the manager doesn't feel as toxic. The environment's a little better. And we've created a plan of finding ways to get some self-care. And I think we'll talk a little bit about burnout, because that's some of what's going on as well. But really, what we have to do is just take a step back and get the full view. Sometimes in coaching, what we say is, you know, the 10,000 foot view and look down at the whole scenario. And some of the things we've already talked about, we talk about going slow. It's doing that assessment. And some of the things we talk about in the class is we really have to own our part in it. Did I stop advocating for myself? Did I become a pleaser and end up down the road where that isn't actually what I wanted? Did I take a job for the money or the title and now it's really not what I thought it would be? Am I so worried about moving that I've stayed much longer than I want to and now I'm incredibly bored and there's just really no way to find any satisfaction here?
I think the more that you can go through introspection, certainly is a part of the process.
Yes.
You've kind of advocated a minute ago for moving yourself in the direction toward what you think you want and kind of doing it in stepwise changes. Sometimes you can go do a volunteer effort to see if there's something that you want to do on a more full-time basis. So, you know, there's a bit of sort of the thinking part of it and a bit of the practice part of it that all comes together, right?
Right. And the conversations. I think one of the best things that somebody can do for themselves is just be curious. The one thing I always tell my clients is don't ask for a job. You're not ready to look for a job. Mm-hmm. You don't actually know exactly what it looks like yet. And even though you think you might, that's a hard conversation for people to have with you. What you would like to know is more about who's doing what you like to do, or, you know, what might be the possibility out there. Or just who likes what they're doing? What are other ways that I could help people or be supportive? Or what are other ways that I could help increase efficiency? I had a woman who was really into research and she got laid off. But what she was actually really great was creating efficiencies and streamlining processes. And as she was talking about what she was doing, she was really like taking all the data and putting it in workable solutions. And so I sent her a few job descriptions and said, just be curious, ask your friends, your spouse, your relatives, you know, anyone who might be doing these kind of jobs. And after a few conversations, she was like, that's exactly what I want to do. Yeah. And she already has most of the skills.
You know, it's a blessing when those things kind of fall into place for you. Obviously, other people kind of go through a bit more of a circuitous process to get themselves from point A to point B. One of the things I think people wrestle with is not knowing whether they should leave their job and the sort of stay or go debate. When you work with your clients on kind of stay or go, how do you encourage them to think through it?
Well, the first is, does it align with who they are? Is it a place that respects them? Does it have an opportunity for them to keep growing and using the strengths and skills that they have? Do they really have a strong sense of belonging and culture? I mean, we all want some of that. The second thing is, will there be chances for you to keep learning and growing for the long term? Or have you tapped out? Most research shows that 3 to 5 years of doing the same thing, you're done. You really need new challenges, new ways to grow, new information. Those are a couple of the best ways to start with, is this the right place for me?
Yeah.
You know, if both of those are a no, then I think you have some other hard questions to ask.
Yeah, and it isn't a simple process, right? You know, you talk about the 10,000 foot view. I describe the kind of getting up on the balcony, right? And kind of looking down on the situation and being able to put perspective on it. And some people go to the pros and cons spreadsheet way, but I guess ultimately it's kind of whatever works for you.
Yeah. You know, it's curious because earlier we were talking about middle managers.
Yeah.
And sometimes people in middle management will come saying they're done, they want out, they're burnt out. And oftentimes, if they just face some of their issues that we talked about before, if they just embrace that these are required new skills that they haven't used. And the biggest thing, if they give themselves permission to not be perfect and make everybody happy, they often find new ways to really enjoy that position.
Yeah, it just requires a mindset shift, coming back to the idea of mindset that we talked a little bit about earlier. All right, I want to make sure we have time to talk about burnout. Okay. I guess I'd note before we move on to that topic, we do have a course for job and career changers that you and our other Pathwise coach, Becca Carnahan, facilitate. That's available. And we also have summaries of some other books, including What You're Really Meant to Do, which Robert Kaplan wrote, and Working Identity by Herminia Ibarra. A bunch of other information on this topic, both to help you think about what you want to do and also to navigate a job search if that's where it ends up leading you. So that's certainly a big area of need for everybody at some point in their career is making a transition.
Yes. And we were excited to make it because we've seen that need again and again.
For sure. All right. Let's talk about burnout.
Okay.
This has been a workplace challenge for decades. It feels like it's come to the forefront more recently as a result of growing focus on mental health.
Yes.
You know, particularly in the wake of the pandemic. You know, when people come to you and say, I'm burned out, how do they describe the situations they're in and kind of how it's manifesting for them, you know, that sense of burnout?
That's a good question. I like that because that is true. I mean, oftentimes there's just a real exhaustion, a lack of hope, and oftentimes a feeling that they don't have control of the situation. When you lose your sense of that I'm in charge, it can be draining pretty fast. We talked a little bit about burnout with middle managers.
Right.
Sometimes that happens because you're just not able to evolve. You're not able to let go. So you're just taking on too much.
Yeah.
One of the other big issues that happen is boundaries. We have all these blurred lines. One of the biggest things is the way the world of work has changed. Another one that I would love to talk more about is COVID. But change in general causes a lot of burnout. The way an organization manages change, the way a person manages change, their ability to build some resilience. My great colleague at Pathwise, Beth Kennedy, she has an awesome model. I use it all the time now with my clients. Building in that self-care and the social network and that boundaries are really huge in working with burnout.
I've found in points in my career, certainly I've been burned out and it sneaks up on you. And all of a sudden it's like literally like you hit a wall. And I've heard other people describe the same thing. You'll just go from like, I'm on it, I'm getting through. And then all of a sudden it's just like, bam, I just can't do this anymore.
I came across Clayton Christensen's article on living a purposeful life. And to me, it is the directive for how to avoid burnout. having some clarity, creating some boundaries around what's important to you, remembering to always cultivate important relationships in your life, because those are the things that will energize you and refill your bucket. The work's always going to be there. There's always going to be more that you can do. And not saying that you shouldn't strive to do a great job, but you have to know what is just not feasible. Because when we overcommit, we're really not doing anyone a service, because it's not able to continue that for a long term.
You have to kind of manage the rhythm of it, right? And give yourself breaks. I find as a leading an organization, you know, you have to kind of look and say, this group needs a pause, right? They need a bit of a breather. They need a little bit of a lull. Don't push them so hard right now. Let them kind of catch their breath.
Right.
Because you can't go 9 miles an hour forever.
And I would even relate burnout to like a mini PTSD, because just like we think of that as war, but what you're doing is you're going and going and going, and you're not stopping. You're not giving, you know, you don't have the chance to break. And at some point you will break. And even when people do it intentionally, what they find is that then it all comes flooding, right? You'll have, you can push those emotions and those thoughts and feelings down, but they're still there, right? Yeah. So giving yourself that chance to just, wow, that was really hard. And that is what I think most of us experienced through COVID. Mm. Even if it didn't feel like our situation was that bad, that constant unknowing change, right. Sitting in this uncertainty, we were just pent up. And then when you get to the other side, there's so much grief that I've had clients come to me, they're like, I don't know what's wrong. You know, it's like, let's just talk about what COVID was like for you.
I think probably more than any other event for most of us, there are people who go through much more difficult situations through much greater parts of their lives. But certainly for most people in the developed world, COVID was a unique experience of like, I'm completely not in control. I have no idea what the future holds. And like, I just feel like the rug got pulled out from under me. And it is unsettling. And a lot of people have never really experienced, had never really experienced that level of sort of displacement from the way that they thought about their lives.
Yes. And hopefully we can gain some empathy into what it's like for people who are struggling day to day, don't have a big support system. They're trying to do this on their own and work and manage small children and figure out all their bills. And it's a lot.
It is a lot. You know, do you feel like there are indications of sometimes it's just, I just need a couple of days off or a vacation for a week. And, you know, you sort of recharge your battery. And then there are the situations where it's worse than that, right? And a week off of vacation or a weekend, you know, of just not looking at email. That's just not enough anymore. Do you feel like there are some signs that you've kind of hit that tipping point?
I mean, certainly everyone is unique, but I mean, a first sign would be if you took that time off and you don't feel any relief, that's a pretty big sign.
True.
Usually if there's two or three areas of your life that are being impacted, that's a pretty good sign. You know, you can't sleep, you're gaining or losing a lot of weight, you know, you're snapping at everyone at work. If a couple of those things are happening, it's something you really need to pay attention to.
Do you feel like there are generational differences here? Are certain age groups better able to handle this than others?
I think everyone handles it a little differently. I don't know if some are better than worse. Some call uncle earlier than others. And is that better or worse? You know, maybe they're better at self-care. And I think we're seeing that a little bit more with the younger generation. There are certainly people who, in all generations, I'm seeing burnout. Some people have built up better resiliency along the way, so they have more techniques. But I can't say that one generation is worse or better necessarily than the other.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder, and I'm trying to think where I read this recently, that there is probably some truth to the fact that older people are more resilient because they've experienced more things in their life, right? If you've had a really awful thing happen to you in the past, then something which may be the worst thing that's ever happened to somebody who's 20, you know, you can say like, I don't want to poo-poo like, oh, that's nothing. But it's like your perspective on that situation, having been through the situation much worse, is obviously going to be different than theirs. You know, so I think that's one factor. I think you brought up an important point. I think this generation that's in their 20s right now, I mean, their knowledge of psychology, right? Yeah. I mean, I had no psychology classes or any of that. I was an engineer in college. And what I learned in the work world, a lot of them are learning it in like junior high school or middle school. And, you know, they're more in tune with themselves. They've got greater self-awareness than I think I certainly did at that age. And I think that probably helps them be more resilient in other ways.
Yes.
But they haven't had, you know, all of the same life experiences.
What I like about that, you said you read a study about older people, and I do think that that is true, you know, so that's a good sort of marker. And that is a different resilience. I guess as a coach, people come to me with burnt out. So I'm seeing it at all ages, but sometimes it's way more severe when they're older because they have thought, oh, well, this isn't anything. I've done this before. Sometimes they just ignore the warning signs too long.
I think when you ignore the warning signs for too long, the consequences can be pretty bad because it isn't linear.
Right.
I think there is definitely, I don't know that it's exponential, but it is definitely bending up in more of a way than is just a linear process. And if you let it get bad enough, it gets way harder to kind of come back from that. It takes more time, more of a break. And the key is not letting yourself get anywhere close to that point. But it's hard because, you know, you get in the throes of your life with your family and in the throes of those obligations and your work obligations. And it's tough.
That's a generational difference. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, the young people don't want to work. And then it's like, well, what kind of boundaries are you having? What kind of health concerns? I mean, we have a huge health issues with people in their 50s and 60s in America. Different processes for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you also kind of creep into the fact that our generation saw our parents move jobs and things not always go well. And the sort of social contract of working for one company your entire life kind of went away with the baby boomer generation. And now our kids are kind of looking at us going like, I've seen my parents get laid off. I've seen them unhappy at work, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, I got to find something that gives me a sense of purpose. I got to find something that doesn't require me to work 60 hours a week. And they're just drawing different boundaries. You used that word earlier. And I think there isn't a right answer here, right? At the end of the day, I think you've got to find what works for you. I think if you want to work 30 hours a week and make $1 million a year, probably not going to happen unless you're famous in some way. But I think you've got to make peace with those trade-offs. But there isn't a right answer. I mean, you don't have to work 60 hours a week to be a successful adult. You can choose to do something different with your time.
Yes. I mean, the world of work has a lot of pluses, a lot of minuses. You know, there's opportunities to work all you want and make millions of dollars. There's opportunities to do something that's more appealing to you. But there are trade-offs for sure. And we do have a culture of do more with less. And that's not going to work for everyone. And so we have to really be aware of, you know, what is it that I need in my life? And then where does work fit in that so that I can support myself and have a different sense of where I'm going?
You mentioned, you know, the work that Beth, our colleague, you know, who focuses on burnout in the book she wrote, Career Recharge. We've also got a summary of a book called Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagoski on the site. So, you know, it's something if you're feeling a sense of burnout, there's some resources that can help you there too. We're kind of at time. I just maybe ask you one last question, Heather. What other career advice would you want our audience to take away? What are sort of your biggest Heather Wilkerson career lessons?
I think one of my biggest takeaways that I want people to know is that everyone has value. Everyone has strengths. They have something to offer. They're a person of worth. And maybe they just haven't found the right path for them. Maybe they have some real roadblocks that they just need to deal with. Maybe they just need to find some different understanding of what success would look like for them. Give yourself a chance. And don't be afraid to take some risks and put yourself out there.
Yeah. And I think I would just add to that, it's what you want. It's not what your parents want or your spouse wants or other people in your life want. I think particularly, we talked a little bit about 20-something. When you have the, well, you know, I should do this, right? I should be a doctor. I should go work in banking. If you're saying I should do this, then it's probably not the right choice for you.
Yes. Or I couldn't possibly leave because I was always supposed to be a doctor. Or Well, there's many of doctors out there doing something different. I've seen them every day. So
yes, there are.
Absolutely.
Well, again, thanks for doing this.
Sure. It was fun.
Yeah, it's good to catch up on what you're doing and how you're working with your client. Appreciate you taking the time.
Well, good.
I want to thank Heather for joining me today to discuss her coaching work, some of the common challenges that people face that lead them to a coach, such as feeling stuck or feeling that they're headed down the wrong path or that they're burned out. If the discussion resonated and you want some support, visit Pathwise. We've got a ton of resources available and a good many of them are free. We've also got coaching available if you want to look for more intensive kind of one-on-one support. And if you'd like more regular career insights, just become a Pathwise member. Basic membership is free. There's a lot of great resources on the website. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Career Sessions, Career Lessons. We hope the nuggets of wisdom shared today help guide your path to the successful career of your dreams. This podcast series is part of Pathwise.io, which is here to help you live the career you want. We provide a comprehensive mix of career and professional development events, insights, tools, and exercises backed by a group of leading coaches and other career management experts. If you aspire to something more or just something different in your career, join us at Pathwise.io. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. See you again on the next episode.